It's nearly noon and time for the KMXT Midday News. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it is your public radio station. Broadcasting from Signal Hill, overlooking beautiful downtown Kodiak, where it's 32 degrees, but seems kind of warm now. We're looking for a slight chance of snow today between noon and 3. Partly sunny skies early, becoming sunny skies later, the high near 31 today, and we've already surpassed that. Northwest wind to 20 miles per hour, gusts as high as 30 today. Clear skies tonight. Gusty winds, though, as high as 30 miles per hour tonight as well. Coming up on your midday report, a snapshot at how the state and Kodiak are leaning on our two ballot measures and candidates. Another update about Kodiak COVID cases. And how the Petersburg School Board is responding to their testing needs for staff and students. All that after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. This hour, all eyes are on the blue wall. Former Vice President Joe Biden has 248 electoral votes. President Trump, 214. After the Associated Press called Wisconsin for Biden, Trump wants a recount. The margin of victory is within one percentage point. NPR's Tamara Keith reports, in addition to challenging the count in Wisconsin, the Trump campaign is also suing to have Michigan stop counting until it can get observers greater access to monitor the process.
In a statement, Trump campaign manager Bill Stepien says legal observers have not been provided meaningful access to numerous locations in Michigan, where absentee ballots are being opened and counted. The Republican Party says it has sent thousands of lawyers to key states to scrutinize counting in close races. Meanwhile, Trump's campaign has already requested a recount in Wisconsin, which AP has called for Biden. Trump campaign spokesman Tim Murtaugh says there have been some irregularities in how absentee ballots are being processed. He estimates that could affect a meaningful amount of the absentee ballots in heavily Democratic Milwaukee County. Tamara Keith, NPR News.
20 electoral votes are still in contention in Pennsylvania. Trump's holding on to a lead in that state by nearly 500,000 votes. But Max Marin of member station WHYY reports hundreds of thousands of mail-in ballots are still being counted in Philadelphia, which leans heavily Democratic.
Election officials have been counting mail ballots around the clock, but so far the results have dribbled out slowly. A little more than half of the expected 350,000 mail ballots in Philadelphia County are finalized. City Commissioner Al Schmidt, a Republican, said officials are being methodical to make sure the count is done right.
The biggest danger in the whole thing isn't who wins and who loses. It's how we approach this whole thing. And if it's not done right, then it potentially, you know, undermines the foundation of our republic. There are a lot of things at stake.
Officials say ballot machinery can process about 10,000 ballots per hour. More results are expected to be released throughout the day and into the evening. For NPR News, I'm Max Marin in Philadelphia.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says he's not troubled by President Trump's talk of challenging the election in court. Here's NPR's Kelsey Snell.
McConnell says courts are routinely involved in close elections.
Going to court is the way we resolve uncertainty in our country.
Speaking at a press conference in his home state of Kentucky, McConnell added that Democrats and Republicans both have attorneys at the ready in key states, including North Carolina and Georgia.
You can anticipate in close elections, both sides will be lawyered up and will end up in court. It's happened over and over and over again. Nothing unusual.
With several key Senate races and the presidential race still unsettled, McConnell says it's up to states to finish counting votes. Kelsey Snell, NPR News, Washington.
This is NPR. In Maine, Republican Senator Susan Collins barely holds on to her seat. The Associated Press reports Collins narrowly defeated Democratic challenger Sarah Gideon. In the presidential race, Trump picked up one electoral vote from Maine's 2nd congressional district after Biden got the state's other three electoral votes. A slow-moving tropical storm over Central America unleashed heavy rains, Nicaragua and much of Honduras, enduring the ravages of severe floods and landslides blamed in the deaths of at least three people. Tens of thousands of people were evacuated. Ada came ashore northern Nicaragua yesterday as a Category 4 hurricane, and forecasters say so far it's on track to get to South Florida this weekend. A psychedelic drug appears to help people with major depression. NPR's John Hamilton has more on a study published in the journal JAMA Psychiatry.
The drug is psilocybin. It's a hallucinogenic substance found in some mushrooms. A team of researchers at Johns Hopkins University gave the drug to about two dozen people with major depressive disorder. And Alan Davis, a faculty member at both Hopkins and The Ohio State University, says it worked.
There was a significant reduction in depression, and the effect of that treatment was more than four times greater than the effect of typical antidepressant medications.
Davis says the drug also produced a quick response, with symptoms improving within a day of the first treatment. Participants received psychotherapy both before and after they took psilocybin. They also were guided by a professional while they were under the influence of the drug. John Hamilton, NPR News.
This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include X-Chair, maker of the X2 home office chair, with dynamic variable lumbar support and 10 ergonomic adjustments. Donating to Gladstone Research Institute to fight COVID-19 at xchair.com.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
With all Kodiak precincts reporting, we have a clearer idea of how Kodiak voted in this week's elections, but about 3,000 absentee Kodiak ballots are yet to be counted. These are the state's unofficial results as of this morning. With over 4,000 votes counted so far, here's what we know about how Kodiak is leaning. Republican Gary Stevens is winning his state Senate race against Alaska Independence Party candidate Steve Madden by almost 1,200 votes, or 65% of the votes. So far, Stevens won every precinct on Kodiak Island, except for Kodiak number 2, the Pillar Mountain side of town, according to the Division of Elections. Kodiak also voted to retain all judges on the ballot. In the U.S. Senate race, Republican Dan Sullivan has a 2-1 statewide lead over Al Gross, and in Kodiak, the race is just as far apart, with 33% of the votes for Gross and 62% for Sullivan. The U.S. House race between Republican Don Young and Independent Elise Galvin is a little closer in Kodiak. Galvin has 41% of the vote to Young's 59%, with about 700 votes separating the two. For the ballot measures, Kodiak is a near even split on whether to approve measure number 1 on the oil industry taxes, with only 25 votes favoring no over yes. As for ballot measure number 2 on ranked choice voting, Kodiak is approving so far with 51% yes votes. And in the race for the presidency, Kodiak voters are so far voting to retain the incumbent Trump. Democratic challengers Joe Biden and Kamala Harris have 32% of Kodiak's vote, and Trump and Mike Pence have 63%. With roughly two-thirds of Kodiak's votes tabulated, this is where we sit now. When those 3,000 absentee ballots are counted next week, we will have a more accurate picture of Kodiak's vote. But as it sits right now, those absentee votes could swing Kodiak's voice on the ballot measures and could make an impact on the U.S. House race. With 23 precincts reporting, Senator Gary Stevens has a comfortable lead in his race against Greg Madden of Soldotna. The Kodiak Republican has 5,696 votes, or about 63%, compared to Madden's 3,279 votes. The permanent fund dividend has been one of the major issues in this race, going back to the Republican primary, in which Stevens' challenger, John Cox, campaigned hard for a full PFD. Stevens, who voted to reduce the PFD to avert drastic budget cuts, narrowly survived his challenge from Cox, a relative political unknown. Despite that, Stevens says he hasn't changed his position on the dividend.
It'd be easy to make promises But you want to be very careful about that. It does seem to me like a lot of the folks running have tried to almost buy their way into office by saying, I'll give you $3,000 if you vote for me. So I'm glad that at least in my district, people have seen the futility of that we just don't have the money. The math does not work.
Madden is an Alaskan Independence Party candidate and also a passionate advocate for a full PFD. He had hoped Cox's support would transfer to him.
It comes down to liberty and freedom. I take those things very seriously, and I respect the people's liberty and freedom. And I believe that the PFD is their property, but the people have choices. And I was just here to make sure that I could be a voice for those who wanted it.
Madden, who is a chiropractor, chalked up his weaker performance to his inexperience as a candidate. Both men concede it's possible that their PFD positions didn't have anything to do with the outcome of the race, perhaps due to a tendency for Trump voters in the presidential election to vote a straight Republican ticket. If elected, Stevens would continue to represent a wide-ranging district that takes in Kodiak, Homer, parts of the Kenai Peninsula, as well as Cordova and Yakutat. At the age of 79, he would be the oldest state senator and the second in seniority. Alaskan Republican candidates and conservative causes did well in early results reported on election night, but with most ballots still to be counted, the outcomes of the most highly contested cases remains unclear. U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan led Al Gross, an independent nominated by the Democrats, and Republican U.S. Representative Don Young led Elise Galvin, who's also a Democrat-nominated independent. Ballot Measure 1, which would increase the taxes paid by major North Slope oil companies, was losing. Ballot Measure 2, which would overhaul Alaska's elections, was also losing, but by a much smaller margin. Every state judge, including Alaska Supreme Court Justice Susan Carney, had received more than 50% of the votes counted so far in order to be retained. Every Republican running for a seat in the legislature that's currently held by that party led in early returns. Some Democratic incumbent legislators were trailing. Anchorage Representative Chris Tuck trailed by the largest margin of any incumbent. He's more than 500 votes behind Republican challenger Kathy Hensley. Democrats expect to do better with results that are counted next week, but it's not clear if they will gain enough ground to retain seats like Tuck's, let alone pick up additional seats. Another travel-related case of COVID-19 was reported today for the Kodiak region. This brings the total number of cases reported since October 20th to 43. That's when the recent spike in infections began. It's also about 30% of the total number of cases reported since April, when the first positive tests of the virus emerged. The Kodiak Area Emergency Services Organization said this case involves a resident of the borough who had recently traveled. Contact tracing investigations are underway. Currently, there are 36 cases considered active. The total number of COVID cases in the Kodiak region since the counting began is now at 138. There is a suspected case of community spread of the coronavirus in the Dillingham area, according to the Bristol Bay Area Health Corporation. 10 people tested positive for COVID-19 on Monday. Those cases are located in two different communities. The Health Corporation said it did not specify which ones. The city of Dillingham says it has been notified of a new case among Dillingham residents. One of the cases is suspected to be community spread, because the source of the infection is unknown. The others are related to travel outside the region. The state health team is contact tracing. This new batch of cases means a total of 14 people in the Dillingham area have tested positive for the disease within the past week. BBHC says that it reports cases it has identified, while the state's dashboard reports cases from a wide range of sources. The state reports that the active case count in Dillingham area is 35, not including the 10 new cases. The state does not require COVID testing for in-state travel, so the Petersburg School District decided to come up with its own policy for staff and students. The policy mirrors the state's mandate for out-of-state travel, requiring 5 days of isolation in addition to at least one negative test result. Superintendent Erica Clude Painter said she supported the new requirement because of the rising COVID numbers around the state.
The state does not require testing for in-state travel, so the Petersburg School District decided to come up with its own policy for staff and students. The policy mirrors the state's mandate for out-of-state travel, requiring 5 days of isolation in addition to at least one negative test result. Superintendent Erica Klutpainter said she supported the new requirement because of the rising COVID numbers around the state.
Everything we're doing is trying to do the best, very best that we can to keep our kids in school. And it's not perfect. This is not perfect. I keep thinking of it as a sieve, a little colander. There are still little leaks all over the place, but we're doing the very best we can, you know, with the information we have.
The policy is for travel by any means off Metcalf Island, by plane, boat, or ferry. It strongly recommends a second test after 1 week of isolation, but it's not required for returning to school. There is also an option for a two-week quarantine instead of testing. Initially, board member Jay Lister wasn't sold on the policy because he said he didn't want to confuse the public with more rules.
I worry a little bit about the confusion. You got all these different travel restrictions from all these different places, and you're trying to figure out who's supposed to quarantine and where.
Mm-hmm.
So you got six different set of rules, and you're trying to figure out how in the heck you're supposed to.
Yep.
Board member Megan Litster said the policy would actually make it easier on people because all the travel requirements would be the same for in-state and out-of-state travel.
By us implementing this, it would actually smooth that out a little bit because it would make it consistent for the school across the board.
Board President Sarah Holmgren said she received a lot of feedback from the community supporting the new policy. She said she supported it because it would help keep the schools open. It could prevent problems if people aren't being careful.
You know, you had a whole family that left that had kids in multiple grades and didn't follow the protocols and came back in. And then you have potentially all three schools shut down.
The policy includes an exemption for travel under 72 hours, like the state's policy for out-of-state travel does. That addition helped gain the support of two school board members, Cheryl File and Katie Holmland, who were concerned about medical trips for staff and students. The 72-hour exemption would also cover short travel by school groups or others doing personal trips. Klutpainter said she did not think the school district should need to monitor small boat trips to nearby communities.
So if somebody is leaving to go on a hunting trip to Prince of Wales Island somewhere on their own boat, mm-hmm. I'm not particularly interested in managing that.
The school board also discussed testing availability in Petersburg. Same-day rapid tests are limited to people with symptoms and some travelers. There is a shortage of rapid testing equipment all over the country, and the Petersburg Medical Center cannot get as much as it wants. PMC's other test results currently have a 3 to 5 day turnaround time. Asymptomatic testing through search on the weekends has a 4 to 5 day turnaround. The new school board policy is an administrative regulation, which means that it went into effect immediately and can be changed much quicker than regular board policies. The board plans to review it every few weeks. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
Kodiak polling locations saw business as usual for voters over the course of Election Day yesterday. Anita Scholl, election official at the Mission Precinct, said that by mid-Tuesday afternoon, they had seen nearly 900 voters, or about 125 voters per hour.
We are probably just under 900. We do about 125 an hour, and it's been steady since there was a line at 6:30 this morning. And it's been, this is kind of slow right now, so we have about 50, 60 people in here, maybe 70.
Scholl says this is not unusual for a presidential election day turnout.
The local elections, October, we may have gotten 800. For the whole day, for the local election. But I believe 4 years ago, we were about at 15 for the day, 1,500. So this is pretty normal for a presidential election.
Many voters still choose to vote in person, even with news of long lines around the country. At the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium, where the polls for Kodiak Precinct Number 1 were moved from the Harbor Master building this year to accommodate COVID-19 mitigation plans, voters said that their voting experience at the polls was easy. While voting in person may have been simple for many, absentee voting counts will have a long way to go. By state law, the counting will begin on the 10th and may take until the 17th of November to finish.
Today's KMXT Local News is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. No Westward Region Tanner Crab for 2021, and it's a wrap for Dungies. More after this.
An AMC-trained fisherman is more likely to survive an emergency at sea. Learn more at AMC.org.
There was some slim hope that a small Tanner Crab fishery could occur in January for Westward Region crabbers, which includes Kodiak, Chignik, and the South Peninsula. The summer survey indicated there might be enough mature male crabs to sustain a 2021 fishery, but after crunching all the data, it was not meant to be. Crabbers are in a gap year between a 2013 Tanner year class that's pretty much tapped out while awaiting a 2018 cohort that's the biggest ever.
So we had the 2013 group. Last year, we had a fishery on that group, but they were, you know, coming up on 7 years old at that point, so they were pretty well aging out of the population. And this 2018 group, it typically takes about 4 years to get them to a legal size, so the expectation that, you know, a lot of them were going to be legal in a 2020 survey was very low.
Nat Nichols is area shellfish manager at Fish and Game in Kodiak.
The upshot there is that this 2018 group is persisting. They seem to be surviving well. If they continue to do that, we could certainly see a meaningful chunk of that group getting legal next year, and then the year after that looks even better.
Nichols added that the 2018 recruits are very widespread.
There's been a good recruitment signal all the way out, and they seem to be growing well.
And he agreed that fewer caught fish throughout the Westward region could account for the steady uptick in tanners.
I don't think it can hurt. There's just a lot fewer mouths out there trying to eat tanner crab right now.
Meanwhile, Kodiak just wrapped up its best Dungeness crab fishery in 30 years, with a catch nearing 3 million pounds for 29 boats. At the Alaska Peninsula, a fleet of 16 boats saw good hauls at 1.4 million pounds, and three boats took over 500,000 pounds at Chignik. The one downer was the Dungeness price. The crabs reportedly fetched $1.85 a pound at Kodiak and $1.75 further west, down from more than $3 in previous seasons. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
Fish Radio is supported in part by Joy Crafts, specializing in marine safety equipment. U.S. Coast Guard approved AMC instruction for commercial fishing vessel safety procedures and drills, serving Kodiak for over 25 years. 486-6293 at 445 Shahafka Circle.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Wednesday. It is the fourth day of November, the year 2020. Sun rose today at 8:32. It will set again at 5:14 this afternoon, giving us 8 hours and 42 minutes of precious daylight. That is a loss of 4 minutes and 33 seconds compared to yesterday. Looking at our local district tides, here on the east side, we have a high tide coming up at 3:19 p.m. That will be a 9.1-foot tide, followed by a low tide tonight at 10:09 p.m. of 0.2 feet. Our high tide for the middle of the night will be at 4:42 a.m. of 6.7 feet, and our low tide tomorrow morning on the east side will be at 9:51 a.m., a 3.6-foot tide. Over on the west side, and these are Uganic Pass tides, we have a high tide coming up at 3:49 p.m. of 14.8 feet, followed by a high tide at 10:35 p.m. of 0.33 feet. Your high tide in the middle of the night will be at 5 a.m. on the west side of 12.9 feet, and your low tide tomorrow morning on the west side will be at 10:42 a.m., a 4.9-foot tide. 32 degrees right now in Kodiak, and they're calling for a slight chance of snow between now and 3 p.m. Then partly sunny going to mostly sunny skies with a high near, 31. We're already past that. Northwest winds will gust as high as 30 miles per hour, so chilly, gusty winds. And that's going to continue overnight. Gusty, chilly northwest winds and a low around 25 overnight tonight with clear skies. For tomorrow, a chance of rain and snow between 2 and 3 p.m. Then a chance of rain after 3 p.m. That should be nice. Cloudy skies tomorrow with a high near 44. Light and variable wind will turn to the south and go to 10 miles per hour tomorrow afternoon. Mariners, here's your synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. Troughing will exist along the North Gulf Coast through Thursday morning. A ridge of high pressure will move into the Central Gulf on Thursday. Troughing. The resulting weather, Marmot Island to Sitkanak, here on Kodiak's east side offshore. We're looking at a gale warning through tonight. Northwest winds will increase to 30 knots, except to 35 knots north of Dangerous Cape. Seas building to 9 feet. For tonight, northwest winds at 35 knots, seas to 10 feet. And for tomorrow, look for southwest winds at 35 knots and seas to 9 feet. Well, that should be nice. For Thursday night, look for southwest winds at 30 knots and seas to 13 feet. And for Friday, southwest 25, seas coming down to 12 feet. Over in the Shelikof, Kodiak's west side, gale warning through tonight as well. Northwest winds increasing to 35 knots this afternoon. Gusts to 50 knots developing out of western bays and passes. Seas to 9 feet and freezing spray in the Shelikof. For tonight, northwest wind to 35 knots should diminish to 25 knots after midnight. Gusts to 50 knots out of western bays and passes this evening. Seas to 8 feet and freezing spray on the west side. For tomorrow, look for southwest winds to 25 knots. Seas will build to 6 feet tomorrow afternoon. And for Thursday night, southwest winds to 30 knots and seas to 7 feet in the Shelikof. For inside waters, Chiniac and Marmot Bays, we both have a small craft advisory through tonight. Northwest wind to 25 knots in both cases, seas to 3 feet with freezing spray. The Kodiak Archipelago Regional Management Body is having their council meeting for the Alaska Migratory Bird Co-Management Council. They're going to have their fall meeting on Saturday, November 7th. It's going on from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. The purpose of the meeting is to make subsistence harvest recommendations for migratory birds. Recommendations approved at this meeting will be advanced to the spring 2021 statewide AMBCC meeting. The meeting will be via Zoom. It's open to the public. For additional information or for the Zoom link, email Kelly Kruger at kkruger@shunac.org. That's K Kruger with K's. Two K's in the front. Things going on at the library. For today, you're having Kodiak Reads, the library's community book club, and they're going to create journals and talk about To the Bright Edge of the World. Join the fun via Zoom on your device. The link to join is on the library's website and Facebook pages, and it can be emailed to you as well. All are welcome to the library's community book club. That's happening at 6 p.m. tonight. And every Wednesday at 10:30 a.m., Ms. Ani reads stories for the virtual children's story time on the library's Facebook page and YouTube channel. And remember, the library offers home delivery for those unable to get out of the house and curbside pickup at the side door as well. Call the library for this service, available Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. The library is also open in person by appointment Monday through Saturday at 11 a.m., 1 p.m., 3 p.m., and 5 p.m. for 90-minute stretches each day. You must wear a mask and follow social distancing guidelines. For more information about all of this, call the library at 486-8686.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT two times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.